Hare Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Saha Viryam Karavavahai Tejasvi Navadhitamastama Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Okay. Chudamani replied, "How can you act according to such a statement? You are under the auspices of the Hindu society. And if you perpetuate practices and teachings that are opposed to the Shastra, the world will come to ruin. We will practice and preach against Shastra and at the same time claim that we are on the path of the Mahajanas. What kind of talk is this? Who is a Mahajana? One can be truly known as a Mahajana only if his behavior and teachings are in accordance with Shastra. How can there be any benefit of the world or to the world if we simply label anyone we like as Mahajana and then quote the saying Mahajana Yena Gata Safanta?" Chudamani's words became intolerable for the Vaishnavas, so they left and consulted with one another in a separate kutir. They decided that since the pandits had blasphemed the Mahajanas, if at all possible, the pandits should certainly be refuted. Paramahamsa Premdas Babaji was not keen to represent their group, and though Ananta Das Pandit was an expert in the Nyaya Shastra, it chose Vaishnav Das Babaji to debate on their behalf. By this time, the sky was clear. A broad sitting place was spread out in the Malati Madhavi Grove. The Brahmana Pandit sat on one side and the Vaishnavs on the other. Many eager Brahmana students had also gathered, so the congregation soon swelled to a fair size. An estimated 100 Brahmana pundits and students on one side, and about 200 Vaishnavas on the opposite side. It is not a week, right? Having taken permission and blessings from the Vaishnavas, Vaishnav Das Babaji sat at their head, a picture of calm composure. Because if you're actually going to deal properly in a discussion like this, if you're very calm, then it will work very nicely, right? Because if you get emotional, then it's not going to function very well. Of course, if you're very expert at Tarka and the other person is not necessarily as good, then you might be able to win by the tricks of argument, right, on the emotional platform. But otherwise, then through intelligence, then one would go through logically, you'll be able to see, make a proper presentation and see what the other person is doing. Yes.
Is it Tarka based on emotions?
No. Tarka just means the technique of argument. It means the argument itself. So it does mean logic, but its more emphasis is on the element of the rhetoric. The rhetoric is just what you say that will win the argument, not that what actually is correct. You know what I'm saying? Just like the person says something that's logical and I say something illogical, but it disturbs them emotionally, so then they leave. So I won. You know what I'm saying? So I didn't actually establish the truth, but I won the argument. So I'm saying, if you're emotional, you're very good at that, you may be able to do that. But otherwise, then logic is required. So if you're able to remain calm, then it will work so much better. So we see is that these elements of being self-controlled, peaceful, all these different things, then they work in all fields. And anything you want to be successful at, you have to have these qualities. Right? Because as soon as one doesn't, then that's where the difficulty begins. Is that? Okay. Vaishnav Das Babaji says, "It seems that in Navadvip I can at last find an assembly similar to those I've seen in Varanasi. which fact gives me great pleasure, right? Because Varanasi, here's 100 Brahmins. There might be, you know, more, because that's all that sits there, and that's all they do is argue. So for him, 100 pandits sitting there, that's not a big deal, right? But Lord Chaitanya sat, Prakashananda Saraswati, there were 10,000, right? You know, that's how many he was sitting in. So that's Varanasi. So for him, okay, now there's something happening here, right? You know, it's not like that. Actually,
sorry, what if kind of diplomatic way is Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was first glorified by the Brahmins?
Yes, yes. That means it's always there, because the thing is if you are able to present the other's viewpoint, they feel you understand. Then when you present something that defeats that, it has much more effect. Well, if you just immediately say something contradictory to what they're saying, they'll feel you don't understand what we're saying. So if you already say everything, like when Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the Brahmins were in ecstasy about how he was describing and glorifying the Brahmins. So he everything that established the Brahmins as superior, he quoted. But then having finished that, because there aren't any more quotes, right? So anything that they would argue, you've already presented, right? You know, in favor of them. But then you show that that's there, but then above that, that's the Vaishnava. So then what are they going to say? So basically, there'll just be his presentation and that's it. You know, there won't be another presentation. Actually, I'm a Bengali, yet most of my life I spent in Varanasi and other places, studying and giving talks. Therefore, my proficiency in Bengali has lessened considerably. So I desire that today's discussion be conducted in Sanskrit. Right? Since we're is pandits and we're and it's Naya, so then let's do Sanskrit. Krishna Chudamani said, "We are holding this assembly in Bengal, so speaking in Bengali is more appropriate. Besides, I am not fluent in Sanskrit like the pandits from the Northwest." Everyone understood from Chudamani's expression that he was becoming apprehensive of debating with Vaishnav Das Babaji. The point is that, you know, everything's in Sanskrit, so he can quote some Sanskrit. But now here the guy wants to talk in Sanskrit, you know. So then it's like, ooh, maybe he's, you know, and he's saying, you know, he's in from Varanasi, and now it's finally, there's some people here, you know. So now he's starting to get a little bit worried. So they requested Vaishnav Das Babaji to converse in Bengali, to which he readily agreed, right? Because you're dealing with the emotional platform here of dealing with position and all that, because Chudamani is proud, right? So now he's presenting his position, not directly, but, you know, just factually. So he's doing it with a calm position, calm mind. If you've done that, well, you know, you guys are here, but I'm from Varanasi, so, you know, this is not... Then it increases the ego. The idea is that the person has ego. That's not good. You reduce the ego. So therefore, he's discussed these things. And yes, no, from here, but from there, he presented the humility. You know, I'm not so proficient, therefore, in Bengali, so therefore, you know, I'd be more comfortable if we spoke in Sanskrit, you know. It's not like saying, "Is you know, I'm not so proficient in English and all that. Is it all right we talk in pidgin English?" You know, then it's kind of like, "Wow, this guy's not," you know. But you say it the other way. "Well, I'm not so good in this, so is it all right if we talk in," you know. Yeah. So then. Yeah, you know, so it's just like, let's say you were some discussion about Chaucer or something like that. So you say, "Well, you know, I was originally here from England, but, you know, I've been in this place for a long time, so I'm you know, German and this and that, so I'm not so good at talking all this thing. So is it all right if we discuss about it in old English?" You know, so it's kind of like, you know, forget it. You know, so it's not going to happen. Right? Chudamani raised the objection by asking, "Is jati, caste, nitya? Are Hindus and Muslims not of different jati? Is not a Hindu degraded by associating with a Muslim?" Right? Right, so he's made some points. I mean, he's made 3 points. Right? So 2 of the points have something that you can consider, either by logic or by that. But the first one is jati, caste, nitya. So that's just a question. That's where the weakness is. Vaishnav Das, "Yes, there's a distinction between the castes. But what type of jati is not eternal? Humans have only one jati, which in this case means species. Within the human species, many different castes have been invented, based on the differences of language, countries, styles of dress, and skin color. Chudamani. Are there no distinctions at all, even on the basis of birth, between a Hindu and a Muslim? Or are the differences simply limited to the areas of attire, language, and so on? Vaishnavdas. The jiva is born into high or low caste as a result of his karma. Depending on caste, humans have specific duties. There are four castes, Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras. Others are Antyajas, low-born outcasts. Chudamani. Are the Muslims outcasts? Vaishnavdas Babaji. Yes, according to the scriptural decrees, they are Antyajas. They do not qualify for the Vedic castes. Chudamani. Then how can Muslims be Vaishnavas, and how can respectable Vaishnavas associate with them? Right. So, in other words, he's establishing the truth according to his questions. But the other person, because he doesn't actually know the truth, he's thinking, now I'm getting to go where I want to. So now he can directly ask his question, because he's asked these other things before, but this was his direct question. Vaishnavdas Babaji. Vaishnavas are those who have pure bhakti, and all human beings are candidates for Vaishnav Dharma. Muslims are not able to perform the duties prescribed for the different varnas because their birth disqualifies them. However, they have every right to participate in bhakti. All the Shastras accept this, and Bhagavan himself has stated in Bhagavad Gita 9:32. O son of Partha, those who take shelter in me, though they be of lower birth, women, Vaishyas, merchants, and Shudras, menial laborers, and of sinful families, can attain the supreme destination. Footnote 1. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to this verse, it is clearly declared here by the Supreme Lord that in devotional service there is no distinction between the lower and higher classes of people. In the material conception of life, there are such divisions. But for a person engaged in transcendental devotional service to the Lord, there are not. Everyone is eligible for the supreme destination. In the Srimad Bhagavatam 2.4.18, it is stated that even the lowest, who are called chandalas, dog eaters, can be purified by association with a pure devotee. Therefore, devotional service and the guidance of a pure devotee are so strong that there is no discrimination between the lower and higher classes of men. Anyone can take to it. The most simple man taking shelter of the pure devotee can be purified by proper guidance. According to the different modes of material nature, men are classified in the mode of goodness, brahmanas, the mode of passion, kshatriyas, or administrators, the mixed modes of passion and ignorance, vaishyas, or merchants, and the mode of ignorance, shudras, or workers. Those lower than them are called chandalas, and they are born in sinful families. Generally, the association of those born in sinful families is not accepted by the higher castes. But the process of devotional service is so strong that the pure devotee of the Supreme Lord can enable people of all the lower castes to attain the highest perfection of life. This is possible only when one takes shelter of Krishna, as indicated here by the word vyapastritya. One who has taken shelter completely of Krishna, then one can become much greater than great jnanis and yogis. Well, that was the end of the page then. Chudamani, you may quote Shastra's evidence, but it's important to see what the underlying principle is, right? Because, in other words, it directly says that, now he's going to get into the indirect, right? But the point is, if the direct applies, why you would then look for an indirect, right? So, in other words, he's quoted the Shastra. It directly defeats his argument. But then he's now, but we have to see what's the underlying meaning, right? But the underlying meaning goes deeper into devotional service, which, unfortunately, he's not qualified for. That's why he has the problem. Because the thing is that when you're acting on the platform of the soul, the acting on the platform of the soul means that you're acting as a devotee of Krishna. It doesn't change your skills, right? So by varna, you will still perform the same skills. Your occupation, you'll still make maintain yourself by those skills, right? So whatever it was. But the position is now they're being functioning in the pure state, right? So the association, you associate because of ashram, right? So that's their complaint, coming, sitting, talking, discussing, right? Was it some business deal? Was the Qazi coming and saying, you know, that we want to put a road here through your ashram and all that, and can you move over? You know, it wasn't that. Does that make sense? So varnas interact because of business, because of economics. Right? And then dharma defines what is the nature of how they interact. You know, who's superior, who's in the senior position, what's the way of dealing, all those different things. Right? But in ashram, you don't have that. There it's just a matter of who's more mature or who's like this. It's not a matter, it has nothing to do with varna. Does that make sense? Right? So Vaishnavas automatically are on that brahminical platform. So the ashram side is there. That's where association happens. So he's not distinguishing here between ashram and varna, which is the general problem. Right?
Okay.
Yes.
So on the basis of varna, it's not the preferential associate, it's the outcast, even for the Vaishnavas?
Means on varna, means if there's a work or necessity, you have to. Like, I mean, because here, he's technically, the Kazi is in the position of the, you know, the Kshatriya position, like that. And so, therefore, then anything to do with that kind of area, then he is the authority, right? It means the local authority in Mayapur, you know, in Navadvip, is a Muslim, right? So just, he's the administrator. So it's not that someone can complain, oh, you're a Muslim, so we won't follow what you say. Then, you know, he's in the administration, he comes with his police and puts you in jail. That's all, you know, it's simple. You know, but that's not the position. So you'd associate on that just with, based on what we're saying is that it's on the ashram side where actual association is. And because he's Vaishnav, so then there's no problem. So outside of the any kind of, you know, common dealings, that's where you wouldn't associate. You know what I'm saying? Like that. You wouldn't invite the Antija over to your house to hang out and this and that, you know?
Yeah.
Like that, because then what's going to be the position of it? But if they're devotees, it doesn't matter what their position, social position is. You know what I'm saying? So even though he's not, means when one is following properly the Vedic system, then one fits nicely into Brahma Kshatriya Vaishya Shudra. If one's not following the Vedic system, then one still fits into Brahma Kshatriya Vaishya Shudra, but it's not science, so scientific. Right? It's not so clearly defined. Like in the modern society, if you say someone is an intellectual, no one has a problem with that as a category. If you say they're administrators, they don't have a problem. If you say they're businessmen, there's no one has a problem. If you say that they're laborers, no one has a problem. Right? And you say, is there another group? There isn't. Right? Does that make sense? You know. So the point is they're fitting there, but it's not scientific. Who's controlling what aspect, who has what influence? That's where it gets mixed up. Right? Does that make sense? You know, like, Vaishyas wouldn't be allowed to run education in the Vedic system. Because education's not for making money. Right? But in the unscientific, you know, following of Varnashram, then that happens. So when you get into the Antyajas, that's the problem. They mix things. That's why it's called mix, because they mix. Right? Does that make sense? Then when you get into the Vaishnav community, then, so in there, then there's a superiority in both of them. Right? But then in the Vaishnav community, as far as their position as themselves, it doesn't matter. But as far as the occupation goes, it does matter. The person in the administration position tells, you know, restricts or limits what the Vaishyas can do. Like that, gives protection to the Brahmins. They support the and protect the Shudras. Does that make sense? That's just there. But as far as actual association, interaction, devotional activities, there's no difference. Right? Does that make sense? So we have to be able to distinguish and know where it's the same and where it's different. You know what I'm saying? Just like who gives class, it doesn't really matter as long as they're comfortable and they can give class and the devotees are happy. But who's going to cook lunch? It's the person who knows how to cook. You know what I'm saying? The devotees say, oh, we're all equal. Okay, so then you cook lunch today. You know? Or if it's all equal, why don't you take out the garbage? You're saying, no, we should be able to give class. So take out the garbage. We take out the garbage. We take out the garbage, we give class. So you take out the garbage, you give class. You know, otherwise, if, you know, you give class, don't take out the garbage, and we'll give class. We don't take out the garbage. Now, who's going to take out the garbage? Does that make sense? You know what I'm saying? So there's a lack of being able to discriminate occupation and the other. Does this make sense? Right? So we have to be able to discern that there's difference. Who has the skill then can perform that. But it's because of that. It's not because of something else. It's not because we're a Brahmin, therefore we, you know. Because otherwise, if you want to get into that, then the ones who are supposed to be giving the class are just the Brahmins. So those who have a Brahminical conditioning, they should only be giving classes. Does that make sense? Right? One might say, oh, this has nothing to do with it, but that's the whole point. Someone's a man, he gives class. Someone's a woman, why can't they give class? So the point is, but they're giving class because they're a woman. Not because they can speak Bhagavatam, it's because they're a woman. So is the guy giving class because he's a man? You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You know, so, you know what I'm saying? So it's not logical. Does this make sense? So it's bodily consideration. So it's like this. And so therefore, if it's a matter of just Vaishnava think, then it's a matter of because it's the qualification and people appreciate. You know what I'm saying? At the same time, there's a difference in nature. So that's why the education, someone who's Brahminical will do that, someone who's administration, someone who has that ability. But when it comes to the other things, it doesn't matter. But the point is you should be qualified for it. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let's say you're going to have a group, some chanting, and then you have some new people and all that. Who are you going to have lead the chanting? Someone who themselves is all mental and not sure about the chanting, or someone who's nicely fixed. So that's the position. Does that make sense? Yes.
So Maharaj, if it is a real Vedic system, can we say that, for example, cleanliness is for all castes?
Everybody.
Everybody.
Means everybody's clean.
The person who is not clean according to the Vedic system is like Antyaja.
Is Antyaja. See, there'll be a slight difference. It means this basic standard of cleanliness will be the same for anyone in the Vedic culture. But let's say the Brahmin, he's going to do puja, right? Mm-hmm. So now, to do his occupation, he can't eat in the clothes that he'll do puja in. So he'll change his clothes, he'll do all those kind of those considerations. Yes. While someone else, it doesn't matter if you go and sit in a meeting and you've eaten in the clothes. Yes. So they won't worry about those things. Mm-hmm. So you will see some adjustments for someone practicing Brahminical occupation, but only because it matches the occupation. But the basic standard of cleanliness is the same. So if they're not giving class, or that means that if they're not going to do puja, then they can eat in the clothes that they're wearing. Yes. You know, like they finish their puja and then like that, then they may eat in the clothes. Or if it's a matter of that's a set of silk, they'll use that the next day, then they'll take that off and put on something else. But otherwise, the basic standards of, you know, of cleanliness are the same. Like that. You know, as I was saying, is that one devotee was telling me how, you know, because he grew up in Calcutta from a very high-grade aristocratic family. So aristocratic generally means is that they would be either, you know, kshatriyas who are not in the position of the administration, or it would be, you know, your very rich mercantile class who, you know, just they move in that same social status. So basically you'd say it's something in there, right? But now in their house, because, you know, joint family, so there's like 50 people in the house or something, and they have a common area where the bath is and the toilets are and all that. So you don't touch the tap for washing your hands after you've been in the toilet. Someone else has to turn it on for you. So generally there's always somebody around, right? You know, unless somebody comes over, you know, with a baby or something, then everybody's there, and then you're sitting there and no one's there to turn on the tap. But other than that, then someone's already there. This is then a Vaishya family. This is, and this was just, you know, this was the culture. You know what I'm saying? So this idea is, oh, the Brahmins are really clean and everybody else can be, you know, how you say, you know, like the, you know, the pics or the, you know, things like that, you know. So it's like, so it's not exactly like that. You know what I'm saying? The standard, the ashram standard of cleanliness is the same. Mm-hmm. Now, if a Shudra doesn't follow it, no one's going to complain so much. Right? As long as he does his occupation properly and everything like that. But if it drops too low, then it's outside. You know, if they don't wash their hands after eating and stuff like that, and then it's like, then they've dropped out of that. But otherwise, they'll also wash their hands, mouth, feet. They'll do all the same things. Does that make sense? It just may not have that so specific a connection with ritual that the Brahmins have. But let's say if the Kshatriyas or Vaishyas are doing some ritual, they'll follow the same standard. You know what I'm saying? And you can tell how high or low their kind of like social class is by how much they worry about those things. You know? Does that make sense? You know, like you see the Kshatriyas, when they go to do yajna, they wear their wooden shoes and stuff because they're considered pure. Right? So even though they're in the palace or going to that, they'll wear those. They won't wear their other fancy shoes. You know, so stuff like that, that they make a distinction. That's all. So then anti just means they don't worry about these things. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Right. In other words, if when you go to school, they didn't, you know, I don't know what grade they show it in now, but we got it in third grade. You know, they show you about how, you know, after you go to the bathroom, you should wash your hands because there's these things called germs, right? They got these nasty little faces and they attack you. And, you know, and the antibodies come and, you know, the heroes and, you know, all that kind of jazz like that. So wash your hands, you know, after you go to the bathroom. But it's like your parents didn't tell you that, right? So the point is that's antyajas. You know what I'm saying? But in the Vedic system, you just learn what's clean from the very beginning. Right? As soon as the child is conscious of it, then it's clean. Even though you're washing your hands for them, but still they know you're supposed to wash your hands here. They're educated, right? So as they get a little bigger, they want to do it themselves because now they're big, right? You know, does that make sense? They're 4 years old, so they wash their own hands. You know, they're not babies anymore. You know, like that kind of thing. Yeah, does that make sense?
We see that during like the mantra rock dance, for example, Srila Prabhupada, he would perform on stage with Allen Ginsberg because he had a big following. Then for that sake of preaching, the association and mixing with such kind of persons is...
But you're not associating, you're giving association. Because they're doing what you do, you're not doing what they do. Uh-huh. You're not sitting down and eating their food. They're sitting down and eating our food. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not that we're sitting there, it's not the crowd, but, you know, after doing a Hare Krishna, then they broke out into, you know, one of the dead, you know big numbers, and, you know, and then everybody was... No. Uh-huh. You know what I'm saying? So... They were just doing kirtan. It was just the devotees on the stage. Everyone else was just you know, they. It wasn't that they were playing their music, and we were kind of taking part in that. We were on the stage doing our music. Uh-huh. Then slowly, different members of the bands came up and played instruments to back them up, mm-hmm. like that. And what's interesting is after that, then they announced the next day they would be having an initiation ceremony at the temple. So one of the guys that had come up and played the drums, he's one of the band members, he played the drums, I don't know what, for Moby Grape or something, you know. He came up and played the drums during the kirtan. He went the next day to the temple and got initiated. Like that. But he never lived in the temple or that, so no one ever saw him again. But he, you know, he played in that band. He followed the four other principles. He chanted his 16 rounds, you know, from that time.
Yeah.
You know? Like that. And so I think Radhanath Maharaj met him, I'm not sure when, maybe in the 90s. So that would have been 60s. You know, so 30 years later, he saw him, you know, they're big neck beads, you know, looking really tough, you know, and stuff like that. And he asked him, wow, who are you, Prabhu? And this and that. And he explained this whole story. Like that. So he had been practicing for 30 years, and he had only had that one kirtan. That was his association.
How about on the plea that we're befriending these people, therefore we hang out with them in our free time, and the more we spend time with them, then they might come to us with questions and they'll gradually become Vaishnavas.
That's true, but at the same time, as we find that community means on our side, also becomes more like them. So you can't even talk straight Vaishnava philosophy in the association of Vaishnavas. They always worry, oh, what about this? Like even yesterday at the class, after the class, someone came up, he's not gay. I felt very uncomfortable. I know so many gays and this and that. And, you know, they would feel uncomfortable. How do you know they'd feel uncomfortable? You know? What do you mean? You know, how do you know? You're not gay. You know, so how, you know, now you're the representative for the gay community or what? You know, so it's like, you know, it's because gays don't ask that question. The question you asked yesterday, the gay wouldn't ask that. Mm-hmm. They just want to know, as you know, with that, we have these feelings, these relationships, is that all right? Can we be can we engage in devotional service? That's what they'd ask. They wouldn't come in with attitude. So, you know, the body is that, they wouldn't do that. Those who are not gay, who are representing the gays, they do that. You know what I'm saying? So the point is, it means you hang out with them. Why is it that because on the material platform they feel comfortable, therefore they'll listen to you, right? Now let us say, just take the common situation in the planet. Let us say, if a person who's religious, he identifies with a particular, you know, religious faith. And he has some difficulty, he wants to know more. Who does he go to?
A religious person.
They'll go to somebody who is a priest of that faith, right? And is the lifestyle of theirs and the lifestyle of the priest the same? No. And, you know, so they go out and the priest comes and hangs out on their platform. No, they hang out on his platform. That's how it works all over the world. So why is it we're trying to reverse it and think that's going to work? Because if we're one of them, why do they want to hear from us? You know, and we're not going to be able to get down as much as the other friends are. So why would we be, you know, if it's a matter of intimacy, then their other friends are going to be much more intimate. You know what I'm saying? You know, we're not going to go to the party and then the after party and the after party party. You know, I mean, we're not going to do that. You know, we're not going to, hey, you know, check out that one. You know, hey, you know, it's like, so we're not going to do that. So then why would they listen to us if intimacy is the real thing? The point is if they see you as an authority in this, you're practicing, you're getting benefit, and you can show them how they can use that in their position, that's when they're going to take you seriously. But just getting down, why would you get down with them? Why not something else? Okay, you're getting down with the guys on the, you know, Upper East Side or something in the yoga studio. Well, actually, it's farther north of the Upper East Side, so it still is just as, you know, low end as this end. So, you know, and so why that? Why not go down, you know, south of the place and get down there with the guys in the gangs? They're not going to do that. You know, they're not going to move outside of the exact conditioning they have. So say, no, we're just getting down. But you're just getting down with the ones that are exactly like you as a karmi. They're not going outside of their group at all. Not at all. You know what I'm saying? Why don't you go get down with the housewives? They're just there, the common, you know, American, just there, you know, mom and apple pie. Why don't you get down with them? You're not. You know, just go knock on their door, go hang out with them, drink a cup of, you know, tea with them or whatever it is, you know, and then talk and this and that. And they're not doing it. So it's simply that they're coming from that conditioning, and because it has the element of the new age, so it seems like it has the spiritual element, so actually it's non-different from devotional service. So it seems it's okay, it's mode of goodness, so therefore it's all, you know, another, you know what I'm saying? All we're doing is justifying our own conditioning. You know what I'm saying? Because if some big yogi or that comes from India and comes to the yoga studio, is he going to get down with them? No. Is that why they're going to listen to them? No. He's from India, so therefore we listen to him. We're into yoga. Yoga's from India. He's from India, so therefore, hey. Does that make sense? Now, they'll appreciate that you're pleasant, nice, can relate to them, those elements. But that's just culture. It's not a matter of, you know, getting close with them. It's a matter of that you have culture. Use the front of the hand. You do like this, it hurts them or makes them angry. You use the front, they come, you just go like that. And then they see it and then you just go away. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So one has to be able to discern between, you know, what is the active element that makes it work. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, it's because you're like them, therefore then they like you, and then maybe you can throw something in, you know, but how painful is that? But if they see, no, you're an actual yogi, you're a real yogi, so therefore they want to know how to be a yogi like you're a yogi. That's why they're going to the yoga studios. They want to learn yoga. So if you're a yogi, they're not a yogi. They're interested in yoga. But if you're a yogi, why wouldn't we want to hear from you? You know what I'm saying? You just present it nicely, you know, in language they can use. But that's what you do for anyone. That's the Vedic standard. They're making it sound like, you know, that's the New Age standard. We have to come up to that. The opening of Mahabharata, I think it's in the second paragraph, the first sentence of the second paragraph, it says, Suta Goswami, then according to his audience, which was sages, therefore he spoke and gave examples that they would appreciate. Right? That's the Vedic system. But they're trying to claim it. No, it's the modern system. The Vedic is this, you know, heavy, hard, you know, non-bending, narrow-minded and all that. We're the broad-minded, intellectual, you know, blessing of the world, you know, like that kind of a thing. It's sad that they're trying to take credit for the Vedic and then, you know, and say the Vedas is not good. You know what I'm saying? Because just as people misuse the Vedic, people misuse the New Age all the time. How many people are being cheated on the planet out of money and emotions and everything, you know, because of that? You know, the other one is just they become too ritualistic and dry and it doesn't become broad enough to actually inspire. But it's not specifically that they're cheating. You know, but the New Age, no matter how good they are, and they got millions of people following, but where are they leading them? You know, so it's not that it's a superior system. It's just a little bit more mode of goodness within the on teachings, that's all. Okay. Is that okay?
Yes. Does that work?
Okay. You had something.
To the previous point that... regarding
cleanliness.
You know, because the anti-just, they usually not up to the standard, but when we learn, we kind of surpass the previous standards and then our previous standards.
Right.
And go higher, higher, and try to get to the Brahminical platform.
Right, right.
But we don't change our varna, we don't change our ashram.
No.
It just comes of, no, because the person, the example was about that he was born like that.
So yes.
For him was a natural thing. For
right.
us, things that were not natural before we joined become natural in due course of time.
Right.
So does it? Isn't the indication that we are changing our varna ashram?
No. It just means you're moving from the perverted reflection of the varna ashram system from the antija platform into the actual varna ashram system. But that's only a step because you're trying to get to the Vaishnava understanding. So actually our only qualification for being in the Varnashram is because of the Vaishnava. Because otherwise you have to have all these good material qualities to actually function within the Vedic system. So we're only gaining those because of devotional service. So things move very quickly in that. So we have them in principle in the main areas. But much of the time you see is we don't have them in the detail. And that's why we drive each other nuts, because we don't have the character and the culture to interact properly like that. That would be a natural part if someone, you know, inherently had all those qualities. But for the devotee, then the most essential things of that faith in the Lord, the surrender to the Lord, the devotional process, the association of devotees, these are the major ones, because some with all good qualities may not do those. You know, as we're seeing here, Chudamani and them, they're not seeing the Lord as the Supreme, the association of Vaishnavas, all this. They just see as Vaishnavas are, you know, supposed to be in the Brahminical standard, and there's kind of sadhus, so therefore they're okay to hang out with. But it's only because of that, not because of the devotional service. So one can have all good material qualities, but if one is not a devotee, it's not really so important. Right? That's the difficulty. But if one appreciates it, then it becomes very, very good. Does this make sense? Yeah. So the difficulty here comes is that it's not seen in its actual position. So they can't distinguish between there's the Vaishnav culture, then the reflection or application of that in the material world is the Vedic culture, right? That if you can either see it as Nitya Dharma or Sanatana Dharma, or you can see it as Naimittik, right? Or then you can drop below that into the Antija, which will have a similar kind of structure, but not so well organized and not very clean. You know, I mean, they have the little bottle of antiseptic that, you know, you've touched everything and you put that on and now you're clean, right? You know, like that. You know, just lots of dead bugs all over your hands, but, you know, they're dead, so you don't have to worry. Is that okay? Does that work? Okay. Okay, Chudamani. You may quote Shastra as evidence, but it's important to see what the underlying principle is. Yes, it is, but the underlying principle is Vaishnavism. He's got a verse that he can't answer directly, so now he's trying to go into indirect and think through that he's going to trick him. Can a defect of low birth be removed without taking another birth? Vaishnav Das Babaji. The misfortune of low birth results from Prarabdha Karma. Such reactions are eliminated by the chanting of Harinama. The Srimad Bhagavatam 6.16.44 declares, merely by hearing Harinam only once, even Chandalas, men of lowest caste, are freed from all material contamination. Furthermore, in the Srimad Bhagavatam 3.33.7, it is stated, oh, how glorious are they whose tongues are chanting Harinam. Even if born in the families of dog-eaters, such persons are worshipable. Persons who chant Harinam must have executed all kinds of austerities and fire sacrifices and achieved all the good manners of the Aryans. To be chanting Harinam, they must have bathed at all the holy places of pilgrimage, studied the Vedas, and fulfilled everything required. Right? So they've done everything. But somehow or another, one can take a low birth. It means we'll see when we get to the end of Manu. By thinking low thoughts, that can cause birth in a low family, even though everything else is high grade. So you may be high class Brahmin as far as lifestyle, occupation, but if your thoughts are impure, that can mean you'll take birth in a low family. Yeah, it's just the way it works. Yes.
Maharaj, regarding to Prarabdha Karma, there is another type of karma that devotees have to suffer anyway. Like, for example, we see that some senior devotees, like spiritual masters, have to suffer sometimes some diseases.
But what is that? It's Prarabdha Karma, but it's just whether it's theirs or whether it's their disciples.
Yes.
But it's Prarabdha Karma in any way.
It's also Prarabdha Karma.
Why? What else would it be?
Well, I heard that there are three types of karma, no? Prarabdha karma, the other two definitions, I don't remember technically the names, but...
But do you know what technically they are?
Yes, there is a karma that you can unavoid. There is a karma that you can counteract, and there is a karma that you bring from previous lives.
But they're all the same thing.
Yeah, well, they are karmas, but...
No, but they're all the same karma.
Then...
That means it's like saying, I'm eating a sandwich now, and then there's another kind of sandwich that I brought from the next room. But where did that sandwich come from? It didn't manifest right there on the plate. No. It's just a matter of whether you're... I'm dealing with this now, and it's dealing from the seed to the sprouted seed to the you know, the plant that gives the fruit to, you know, karma that's already finished. You're not distinguishing that with there, but you say it's from the last lifetime. But the last lifetime means it's going to be turned into Prarabdha Karma. It's whether the seed was sprouted here or last life or the life before. But it's just different angles of the same thing. And there is no such thing as karma. You can get rid of the reaction. That's the materialist's, you know, dream. You know what I'm saying? Let's say you've done something wrong. And so, take an example. There's a planet that therefore has a problem. So therefore, if I do this, then that planet will stop giving me problem. Right? So we're thinking, I'm counteracting the bad. There's no such thing as counteracting the bad. You know what I'm saying? If you're in the kitchen and knock over a bottle and it hits the floor and breaks, now is there some mantra, some ritual you can do to counteract that and it'll suddenly go whoop, back up on the thing and not be broken? No, you can clean it up. You know what I'm saying? So now what do? I change how I deal and I do the right thing so the next bottle I don't knock off. Does that make sense? So in other words, you're getting the bad reaction from the previous. It doesn't matter what you do, it's going to still come. But by changing your endeavor to proper action, that means then you'll get proper result in the future. Right? So as soon as the reaction from the bad is over and the one from the good has increased, then you start getting good results. But you're not going to get rid of the results. There's no such thing. It's an illusion that people, they want to do. They are hoping for that. Some little mantra, some little this, some little that. No, there's just something that will create something good. And basically what you're doing is the good is kind of counteracting the bad. You know, it's kind of like being in the bathroom. You have that little spray can. You know what I'm saying? It's not that the spray can gets rid of the bad smell. It just covers it with a good smell. You understand? That's what you're doing. It's a material world. It's not a nice place.
So it's not as childish as to understand that if we chant in the front of the deep, if we clap, if we do some good, if we do some service, we can change our karma.
Okay, now wait a minute. Do you understand? It means it's fine. We'll discuss that. But you're changing your argument totally.
Okay.
You're changing it from mundane karma to mundane activities to get rid of it to spiritual activities. You know what I'm saying? And using it as the same argument, but they're two different things.
Okay.
You understand?
Okay.
Means the mundane can't get rid of mundane because that's just the way it is. It's law. There's a law of justice. If it's not like that, then people would get confused. Right? You've done something wrong, you get punished for it. That's just the way it is. Now, the point is on the spiritual platform, you've done devotional service, the reason for being punished is, in theory, you're supposed to learn from it, though basically nobody does. You know what I'm saying? So, they're still doing all the nonsense. So the point is by taking up devotional service, you give up that desire for nonsense. Therefore, there's no need of a reaction. Does that make sense? Yeah. And, yeah. Okay, so that's a different category.
Okay.
But it's not that, oh, I mean, my birth chart, it says this, so if I do this and that. All it is now, the reason that the planet is badly situated, because you behave badly, so therefore the planet is situated to give you the reactions to your previous activity. So now I'm going to counter that by performing the proper activity I'm supposed to. So when the result of that comes, then I get good. But it's not that by doing the good I get rid of the bad. No, the bad's still there. And it'll stay as long as the bad's supposed to be there. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's not like I have a bunch of garbage in the kitchen, so therefore I'm going to counteract that by putting up some flowers or something. But someone goes, wow, look at all the garbage. Oh, check the bouquet, you know. You know, it's not going to work. You know what I'm saying? They're two different things, but we like to think, no, I can just do this and then it's all gone. No, you can do the proper activity that is what you should have done previously but didn't do. So therefore, then the planet will react nicely because of that. But the planet's just there to give you your results. It's just like the mailman comes to your door and then he's going to bring a bad mail, so then there's something you do and then you turn it into good mail. Is that how it works? No, it's just he just brings the mail. That's all his things. You know, you do good work, then he brings you good mail. You do bad work, you get bad mail. Right? You get a parking ticket, you know, he's going to bring it. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So it's simple like that. Okay? Does that work?
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
Maharaj, you mentioned for devotees, the thing of devotional service, there's no need of lessons.
There's no need if they've learned the lesson. If they haven't learned the lesson, then the lesson is there. You know what I'm saying? In other words, if, you know, one was proud before in one's position, but now one sees oneself as a servant of Krishna and is not proud, then whatever the reactions to his previously being proud, he doesn't require that. But if he's still proud as a devotee in performing his, you know, particular occupational skill, then the reaction for that pride will come. But it's not the modes of nature arranging it, it's Krishna's arranging it, because you require it. You know what I'm saying? If you have a fever and you're a karmi, what medicine do you take? You take fever medicine, right? Now, if you're a devotee and you have a fever, what medicine do you take? Fever medicine. Yeah, point is. But if you're a devotee and don't have a fever, do you need the medicine? No. That's all. So it's straightforward. The difference is the modes of nature just manage it because that's the way it is. But as a devotee, then Krishna, he gives the direction. It's still managed by the modes of nature. Maya still manages it, but he gives the direction so it can be reduced or anything. Or if it's Vaishnava apparat, it can be increased. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So it's directly dealing with Krishna. But it's not because of your past karma. It's because of your present mentality. See, the karma, his past activity, he gets the present reaction to that. Right? Because that's just the way it is. He did the activity, so he has that consciousness. Even if he's changed the consciousness, he's a karma. He deserves it anyway. He did the activity. Right? Because he's working in the material world, so everything should be just materially. But if you're a devotee, then the point is are you becoming God conscious? Right? So it's a matter of what's your consciousness now, whether you get a reaction or not. If the consciousness is proper, no need. If not, then you get.
Sometimes the devotees ask for cases like, let's say, a Sankatan devotee distributing books for 20 years, an accident.
Yeah, but the point is why was there an accident? Whose car is it? What are the laws of the road? Is he following it? Because he's a Sankirtan devotee. Therefore, if he pulls out behind a monster truck that he can't see around, you know, doing 90 miles an hour, and there's a car coming the other way, then, you know, it just should be something like, you know, Harry Potter. He just kind of like, he fits in between and goes by. Everyone becomes really thin and all that. Oops, and that goes back. And, you know, Srinam Sankirtan Kijai. You know, is that how it's supposed to work? No, you pull out in front of a car 90 miles an hour, you get cream. That's it. So why, if he's a Sankirtan devotee for 20 years, how come he hasn't learned that? You know what I'm saying? The truck is 100 feet long. How does he not know this? He's been driving on those roads for 20 years. Why doesn't he know this?
In the case
of No. Don't try to do that. The point is address this. It's the laws of nature. You know what I'm saying? It's just the way it is. A devotee falls out of a 10-story window, if he hits the ground, there's a problem. Does that make sense? Okay, now give you another example.
Okay, another example. A close friend of mine is nearly almost dead with a severe infection. He was in the hospital. His wife was, I was there, his wife was asking, why is this happening? So,
why shouldn't it be happening?
Yeah.
Well, birth, death, old age, disease. She thought, now you're a devotee, it'll all go away. See, that's religion. That's not transcendental. So that is your, what did he say? Artarti, or arta. Is that I have an anxiety, I turn to God, it should go away. If God does that, God's good. If it doesn't, then, you know, there's a problem. You know what I'm saying? But the point is, you know, he's sick. So was he, like, you know, like the example of pure devotional service or something before he got sick? No. So then, therefore, there's impurity. So if he gets sick and that purifies him, then what's the problem? You know what I'm saying? And so if he lives after that, great. Then he'll perform on a better purified platform. And if not, if he dies, then he'll be purified. Then he thinks of Krishna and goes back to Godhead. We're not supposed to be here. You know what I'm saying? We make it as nice as possible, but we're not supposed to be here. You know what I'm saying? We put fancy tiles on the bathroom wall. You know, you can put in a few dry flowers and all this and that. But it's still a toilet. You know? But suddenly now, as we become religious and it's not a toilet anymore, Okay, so the toilet turns into a phone to God. Okay, yeah, the big white phone. Okay, so then that's there. But still, does that make sense? Okay. Okay. See, so we have to be able to distinguish between what's actually spiritual, what's material. In other words, we're taking the material. That's what Prabhupada gives the example. Make the best use of a bad bargain. Being in the material world is a bad bargain. We're not supposed to be here. So the idea is how to qualify yourself to go back to Godhead. And while we're here, we follow the etiquettes and the culture, and it makes it as nice as possible. You know what I'm saying? You know, you flush the toilet after using it. It improves the quality of the bathroom. Right? After you use the bathtub, you scrub the ring. It improves the quality of the bathroom. It's still a bathroom, but it makes the quality better. You know, you open the window, it makes the air fresher. You know what I'm saying? Like that. You know, you don't leave the toothpaste all over the place. You know, it just improves the quality of it. So that's what the Vedic rules are saying. How to make it a nicer, more comfortable. It's still a bathroom. But it's a little bit nicer. You won't get, you know, so it's a little bit more mode of goodness toilet rather than a mode of ignorance toilet. Does that make sense? You know, you use a proper toilet, it actually flushes, you know, like that. I've been in some parts of the world. They don't flush. They don't work. I don't know why everybody likes it, but they just don't work. You know what I'm saying? But it's a normal toilet. You know, everybody thinks it's cool. I mean, no offense, but some of the worst toilets I saw were in Bulgaria and Romania. Like that. Really weird toilets, you know. No? All these little pipes coming and this and that, trying to make them work. And some, I don't know, some crazy Russian design that they had to live with and all that. So now they're not with Russia, now they get, you know, ones that work and stuff. You know, so it's improving. Hungary has weird toilets also. Does that make sense?
In the case of like a car accident like that, we often hear devotees say, oh, Krishna had another plan for him.
That's there also. That's there also. But the point is you don't follow the rules, accidents happen. So therefore, we have to, you know, drive nicely. So the point is, there's two things. One is if he's a nicely situated devotee or this or that, then you understand, yeah, there is another plan. And that whatever it is that there was something left that needed to be removed, and so that's one way to remove it really fast, you know, very intense and very fast. So that way then, you know, they move on to something better. But at the same time, as there's also to learn that there's proper ways of driving, and so therefore follow them. Because it's we can't say that, you know, bad driving is okay. Does that make sense? You know, if we belong to Krishna and the car belongs to Krishna, we have to follow the rules nicely. Does that make sense? So that has to be done. But that's just what one learns for yourself. But the other thing is, yes, there's some, Krishna has some plan and this and that. You know? But generally you only use that when it's someone who one would consider more advanced or someone one's extremely attached to. You know? So one would use that example. Does that make sense? Because yes, there's always the Lord's plan. But the point is that we should, you know, follow our duties within the plan properly. Does that make sense? Yeah. So he has a plan. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. You know, they're supposed to be around a certain amount of time, and then so that the time is up. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the ways. Does that make sense? So if one's coming in from that angle, then that works nicely. But if you're just talking about karma, then you have to get down to the actual mechanics. But if you're talking about the emotional, the sentimental, Krishna conscious value in it, then you look at it. You take that perspective. You understand? Because they're all correct, but it's just which one to take for the situation. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Is that okay?
Yes.
Yeah. Emotionally works. Yeah. Okay. Okay, so then, to be chanting Harinam, they must obey that the holy places of pilgrimage, studied the Vedas, and fulfilled everything required. Right? So they've already done that before. Right? It's said that someone who becomes a devotee has already been through everything there is to do. Right? And now they've come to devotional service. Right? Because if you haven't done everything, there's always the idea, well, you know, okay, you know, I've done, you know, 8,700,000, you know, species, you know. And so, no, excuse me, 300,000. Right? Yeah. So that, you know, that last 100,000, I didn't check those out. So maybe there's a possibility. He says, yeah, but that's, you know, that's a worm in stool. That's this. That's that. No, but still, you know, got to give it a chance. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to this verse, as it is stated in the previous verse, a person who has once offenselessly chanted the holy name of God becomes immediately eligible to perform Vedic sacrifices. One should not be astonished by this statement of Srimad Bhagavatam. Right? Why does it say once offenselessly? Why doesn't it say who's come to the platform of offenseless chanting? Because we'll say, no, but that's offenseless, but we'll talk about it as if it's a permanent situation. Or it is the present permanent situation. No, it means once it's chanted, it brings you to that qualification. Mm-hmm. Now, if you are consistently chanting offenselessly, that makes it very easy to come to the position of, you know, taste and attachment and these higher devotional elements. We're just talking about means you get liberation for that. You know, you're qualified to do the Vedic yajnas. So that just requires once. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? One should not be astonished by this statement of Srimad Bhagavatam. One should not disbelieve or think, how by chanting the holy name of the Lord can one become a holy man to be compared to the most elevated Brahmana? Right? To eradicate such doubts in the minds of unbelievers, this verse affirms that the stage of chanting the holy name of the Lord is not sudden, but that the chanters have already performed all kinds of Vedic rituals and sacrifices, right? Because there's the element connected to the Lord, it makes it perfect. But since that is not appreciated, then you say, but they've already done all that before. Right? You know, the person's a Naistika Brahmachari. It means he's already done, gone through the Grihastha Ashram, performed all the duties, come to the position of seeing that there's no need or desire for him to do. Therefore, this life, you don't see him go through the Grihastha. He just stays like that. Yes.
There's a statement by Srila Prabhupada though in one conversation for him. Our good fortune was done by him.
Yes.
What's that?
That means otherwise we wouldn't have actually been so interested.
But we cannot say that we've done many of these things. Not all.
No, but it's not up to us to say it. Here, you know, someone else is saying it. Krishna's saying it, others are saying it. So we don't have to worry. It's like this. You're walking down the street there, you know, just minding your own business, you know, looking for a good falafel shop there, you know, in Tel Aviv, and then suddenly the Harinam goes by. Or so that's making your fortune. Otherwise, you wouldn't have gone looking for the devotees. It's not that you were out there looking, where's the temple I heard about? They know, you know, like this. It's that they went by, and they said, oh, wow, what's that? You know what I'm saying? So that's making your fortune. Because otherwise we wouldn't have gone. But like Vidura, he goes out looking. He looks for Maitreya. He looks, you know, these persons go looking.
Then the next thing. And so many people were walking there, looking for the same falafel.
Yes.
So
it was a good falafel shop, you know. Don't, yeah. You know, I mean, just, you know, don't knock the falafel shop.
So somebody became interested and so many passed by.
Right.
So.
What's the difference? To be chanting Harinam, they must obey that all the holy places of pilgrimage study the Vedas and fulfilled every requirement. So they didn't.
So
in other words, this will be a Yata Sukriti that'll be there, and then by again and again seeing it, they'll take it up. In other words, one has done so much of Yata Sukriti, right? So this is the one that pushes over the edge. So the others, it's just beginning. So you keep doing that, and then they get the benefit. So it's like every day they hear Harinam, every day they walk by. You know, and after a few years, they ask, you know, what are you guys doing? You know, but someone else, it's the first time they see him, they walk over and ask, what are you doing? So the difference is in Agyata Sukriti. You know what I'm saying? So by the devotees constantly doing that, then you improve everybody's quality of, you know, position of taking up devotional service. So if it's not regular, then it's not going to move quickly. You know what I'm saying? So that's the point, is every day you see the Harinam, even if you think they're a bunch of twits, it doesn't matter. You're getting that benefit. And then after a while, you get purified, then you'll ask, okay, what are you doing? You know what I'm saying? If you just hang out with them, be a nice guy and all that, there is no devotional service. So how is that going to invoke? You know what I'm saying? The point is we made thousands upon thousands of more devotees by direct preaching than we ever have by indirect preaching.
In the university, somebody becomes a devotee at the place you work. They all become devotees when you go and hurry
them. Yeah, yeah. You know, it's just like, remember, I think Krishna Kshetra, he was living around the corner from the temple, right? Never saw the devotees, you know, and then, you know, and either just before college or part way through college, you know, you take some time off and go traveling. It was in the summer. He went to Germany. He met the devotees there, joined there, and did his, you know, service there, you know. But he was living next, he didn't even know there were devotees. You know, later on he found out that there was a temple around the corner from his house. You know, you look in the BTG, wow. You know, so it's like that. Sometimes it's... I think there's a saying like that. What is it? Yeah, what is it?
I'm so blind as those who cannot see.
Yeah, that one would work, but also it's just that those who live next to the Ganga bathe in a tube well. Right? I mean, think about it. How many devotees living here, thousands of them, go and bathe in the Ganga? Not so many. But people are coming. These people coming in the buses, they don't live here. And they come here, and what do? They take bath in the Ganga. Right? Yeah. So, like that.
And they take the devotees from Bengal, drive up to Rishikesh. To
Yeah. Vrindavan, they go to Rishikesh, take bath there, but they won't go to the Jamuna. You know. Yeah, go from here, bathe in the Jamuna, come from there, bathe in the Ganga. Yeah, so it's just like that.
Just
Yes, of course. Yes.
Also, Prabhupada said on the question of this verse, if we did, the Lord is asking, he said, I did it for you, all those things. Described in the forest.
Yes, because this your means you're getting, everything's being fulfilled because you've come in contact, the devotees are preaching, therefore you're taking up those activities that do all that.
I
means that don't apply the Jesus thing here.
Yeah.
You know, that you're sitting in the cave and you have, what do you call it? What's that called? You always, you know, you have to, no, it means you have to wrap yourself up because you have to stay at the back of the pack because your fingers are falling off.
Leprosy,
yeah. Okay, so you're sitting in the cave, you got leprosy and all that, and Jesus is on the cross and the blood's flowing and all that, and suddenly the lightning bolt, and then you feel all this pain and everything like that, and then suddenly, you know, everything's normal and that because you had faith in Jesus. And don't try those ones. You know what I'm saying? That Prabhupada already did it. You know, he was out there, you know, going to the place of pilgrimage for us, and then he had to go back again because he forgot about that guy. He like that. He studied the Vedas, and this is for me, and well, this is for him. And no. He means these things are being done. Where's the place of pilgrimage? It's the temple. It means you can go to all the places of pilgrimage, but nothing is as good as the temple. Why is there the concept of coming to Mayapur, Gaur Purnima, as a thing to do? Who gave that idea? I'll give you one guess. Huh?
For devotees, you
mean? For whoever. You know, I mean, you're the one that we're dealing with the question. We're not talking about, you know, your aunt's mother, sisters, daughters, you know, how you say, nephew's son here. Right? Who established the Gaur Purnima Festival here in Mayapur? Yeah, okay, so that means you come here and you get that 1,000 times benefit. So you're coming to the Dham. So did he establish, was he worried about establishing places in so many other tirthas? Not really, unless it's something major. You know, made an effort for Kurukshetra. right? But otherwise, you know, Puri, Mayapur, Vrindavan. Because these are dhams, so you get 1,000 times the benefit. So coming here once, that's like visiting 1,000 places of pilgrimage. Now, when you see the list in the Mahabharata of all the places of pilgrimage in India, that amazing ones that people go to when they make that tour, there's not 1,000. So just by coming here, you know, for one day, you know, it's more greater than having visited all the places of pilgrimage. Right? Devotees stay for a few weeks, then what's that? You know what I'm saying? So he's creating all this. So you study all the Vedas. What's the essence of all the Vedas? Where do you find the essence of all the Vedas? It's in Bhagavatam. But if we're going to technically get there, then where do we... Okay, Gita. And that is an essence of the Mahabharata. But then going back, the Vedas, the philosophy of the Vedas is in the Upanishads, okay? So that's Vedanta, right? Upanishads means the end of Veda. It means you have the Samhita, that's the beginning, the Brahmanas, so that's called the Purva, right? Purvanga, right? So then after that is then you have the, what's it called? Aranyakas and the Upanishads, right? So that's the end, right? So the Karmakanda is used the front, and the Vedantists use the second part, right? So that's where the philosophy is given. So that's Vedanta. That's the given in the Bhagavad Gita, given in Vedanta Sutra. Then the perfection of that, commentary is given in Bhagavatam. So now if we're studying Bhagavatam, are we not studying all the Vedas? Right? So Prabhupada established that we read Bhagavatam every day. Right? Like that? Okay. Now what was the other thing? And fulfill everything required. So proper behavior, you know, not offenses, regulative principles, all those. He established all those. So the Agyata Sukriti, that you can have faith in it, the practices that therefore fill, you know, make it possible to do all that. So it's all being technically fulfilled. But it's just on the devotional platform, it's so much more simple, it's so much more effective. That's what we're dealing with. Because by following just by the religious, you gain the piety, but it won't actually get the devotion. And it takes a real, real long time. You know, you're talking thousands of lifetimes. Is that okay? Yeah? How by chanting the holy name of the Lord can one become a holy man to be compared to the most elevated Brahmana? To eradicate such doubts in the minds of unbelievers, this verse affirms that the stage of chanting the holy name of the Lord is not sudden, but that the chanters have already performed all kinds of Vedic rituals and sacrifices. It is not very astounding, for no one in this life can chant the holy name of the Lord unless he has passed all lower stages. Right? So he's saying it's all that. But by coming in contact with the devotional process, you're not doing devotional service. You're doing Agyata Sukriti. But the power of that is so much greater than if you had done all these others. That's what Gita's saying. By devotional service, you get the benefit of all the sacrifices, all the studies, all the austerities, all the visiting of pilgrimages, everything. Right? That's that one concluding verse there. So that's what Prabhupada's making available. That's why his program is so good. Right? You get up in the Brahma Muhurta, you attend the Mangal Artik, there's Tulsi Artik, the Shringa Artik, chanting of Japa, darshan of the deities, circumambulating the deities, taking Charinamrita, offering prayers, worshipping the spiritual master, hearing Bhagavatam, taking prasad, associating with devotees, like that, taking care of guests that come. Right? Does that make sense? So these are a very technical, exacting system that's done so pleasantly. There's nothing left out of the Vaishnav system in our morning program. Right? Does that make sense? And then the most essential ones are reflected there in the evening program. You don't circumambulate the deities, take charinamrita, but things like, you know, worshipping the deities, you know, the Pancharatrik deity worship, worship of Tulsi, hearing of Srimad Bhagavatam, associating with devotees, you know, doing that in the Dham. So all the five are there And in the morning, the five are there, and all the other supportive ones. Does that make sense? So therefore, everything is being done. And by people come to that, and then by that, then they get that faith, and then they become devotees. Right? How many of you here that just first time came in contact and became devotees? There are those who have done that. But others take a little more time. Some a few more days, weeks, months, some years. Seeing the devotees come in contact, and it takes years before. But others, I think it was Madhudvisa. He just walked in on the Ratha Yatra in San Francisco. He was just in the park, and he had his bag. He had no place. He was just traveling. And he saw the Ratha Yatra and saw, wow, this is cool. Took his backpack, threw it up on the cart, went for the whole parade, prasad, went back to the temple, and he was a devotee. Right? So that means basically it was all done. It just had a little bit left. Right? That makes sense? Or the quality in which he appreciated. But still, that meant it was already accomplished. You know, but others, it takes a few more visitings of the temple, right? Like we were discussing, that one devotee was saying it took him, I think it was 7 or 9 Sunday feasts before he turned, you know, from a demon atheist until he joined the temple. So the point is these things, these are the activities of the holy places, studying the Vedas and fulfilling everything required. For no one in this life can chant the holy name of the Lord unless he has passed over all lower stages, such as performing the Vedic ritualistic sacrifices, studying the Vedas, and practicing good behavior like that of the Aryans. All this must have first been done, just as a student in law class is to be understood to have already graduated from general education. Anyone who is engaged in the chanting of the holy name of the Lord, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, must have passed all lower stages. It is said that those who simply chant the holy name of the Lord with the tip of the tongue are glorious. One does not even have to chant the holy name of the Lord and understand the whole procedure, namely the offensive stage, the offenseless stage, and pure stage. If the holy name is sounded on the tip of the tongue, that is also sufficient. It is said herein that Nama, a single number, one name, Krishna or Rama, is sufficient. It is not that one has to chant all the holy names of the Lord. The holy names of the Lord are innumerable, and one does not have to chant all the names to prove that he has already undergone all the processes of Vedic ritualistic ceremonies. One chants once only, it is to be understood that he has already passed all the examinations, not to speak of those who are chanting always, 24 hours a day. It is specifically said here, to Byam, unto you only. One must chant God's name, not, as the Mayavadi philosophers say, any name, such as the demigods' names or the names of God's energies. Only the holy name of the Supreme Lord will be effective. Anyone who compares the holy name of the Supreme Lord to the names of the demigods is called Pashandi, or an offender. Right? Because the Mayavadis just say, no, they'll be doing a Shiva Kirtan, it's a Vishnu Puja. They'll do a Vishnu Kirtan, as Ganesh will do that. They don't care. For them, it's all the same. It doesn't matter. So that's why it's offensive. So the point, if someone's chanting, then they've crossed all these things. And then it's a matter of that faith, how much they have, you know, applied themselves to that process. Because otherwise, it says here, chanted once. You know, the Kirtan goes by. It's not everybody says Hare Krishna. Right? Many just watch. You know, some may say something about it. Some will shout out Hare Krishna, like that. So that's what Bhaktivinoda Thakur says. The one who says Hare Krishna is the best man in the crowd. Right? You have this whole crowd, and one guy says, Hare Krishna. You know, that's the best guy. Everybody else is, you know, losers. What to do. Right? But they've all heard, so that's a jnata sukriti. But for this one, the Agata Sukriti has come to the point where he's actually chanted. Now, it's not necessary that he'll continue at this point, right? Because it's not enough that it brings it up to the point of faith. But he started that process devotional service and the association of devotees, right? Because that's where it starts. Then when that matures, then it becomes Shraddha, and you actually take up the process knowingly. Right? Because otherwise the person will say Hare Krishna because the Hare Krishnas are going by. But it's not that he understands it or has faith in Krishna or faith in the name. Just there's that enough purification that he's attracted. Is this worth? Yes.
Does the process of influence on other people like this, the Agyata Spirit, does it depend on the faith of the devotees?
Does it depend on the faith of the devotees? I mean, that will have a lot to do with it, because the more faith you have, the more commitment, the more people will notice. People notice someone who's committed to an activity. Even if an activity is stupid, right? Let's say a new fashion comes out, you know? In the beginning, it looks stupid, right? But enough people do it with time, and then they do it with attitude, then after a while it becomes a normal fashion. You know, then you go into your normal kind of like store and they have that there. Then you know it's become pretty common, right? Does that make sense? So the point is anything done with conviction, that's what's attractive. If you do it without conviction, it's like, I'm doing what I do without conviction, so why would I want to do what they're doing without conviction? Right? So the point is to have conviction. That's the essential point. It's not that, you know, whether you wear devotee clothes or not wear devotee clothes, or you do this kind of harinam or that. It's whether you have conviction when you're doing it. That this is Krishna, and this is, you know, we're doing this to please Krishna. And the living entities, who are all Krishna's parts and parcel, will benefit by this. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's, then it works. Yes.
If we now we become a devotee or we try to become a devotee, and we pass already this diverse benefits which are that we took us and have been cultivated, why does it take so long to reach our goal? Or so many tests are coming, so many difficulties are coming.
Okay. Well, one thing is that we're talking about a lot of lifetimes of pilgrimage and studying the Vedas and that. We're talking, you know, a long time. So we're just discussing here one lifetime. You know what I'm saying? So working on the, if it didn't happen yesterday, it's already too late principle, that is just a matter of, that's our conditioning. But it's just a matter of commitment. You know what I'm saying? Because we want it to happen, but at the same time, we're happy to do so many other things. You know, it's like Nectar Devotion gives that example, the devotee who wanted to please the Lord, so he just danced all night. You know? And so then he got their results. You know, but we're thinking, well, it's late, you know, I'll go to bed. You know? You know what I'm saying? So we'll do it tomorrow. So then we have no problem with stretching it out, so it gets stretched out. You know, saying Maharaj Kadvanga, he surrendered in a moment. It worked in a moment. Right? Does that make sense? But the system we have is so powerful that if you follow it nicely with sincerity, it will work in one lifetime. Does that make sense? So look at it that this lifetime, that's all you're having to worry about. But to get there, that was many lifetimes. So it is quite quick. But one could do it quicker, but it doesn't matter. Even if one doesn't, in this lifetime, it will work out. And we have many, many examples. You know, so many devotees who've, you know, done service 20, 30, 40 years like that, and then this their consciousness and everything at the time of leaving, then you can tell that they're doing okay. It's a question of surrender, yeah. Because Shraddha is the first principle. Each stage of going through these nine levels of Shraddha to Prema simply means the increasing of Shraddha. Right? When you have Shraddha, okay, then to worship God, but then when the Shraddha is more, you'll take up association of devotees. When the Shraddha is more, then you will take up the practices. When it's more, then you worry about proper practice. When it's more, then you be fixed in the practices. When it's more, then you get that taste. Because right? If there's an idea that I can get taste out of other things, why will you get taste from the holy name? It means we'll get some taste, but it won't be constant. Well, we call it ruchi. You know what I'm saying? It means we go to the Harinam, they have the 5-day, you know, Harinam program and all that, and everybody should come for 8 hours and, you know, all those different things. But you do those things, you get a taste. But then when the 5 days are over, then we life back to normal. You know what I'm saying? But it's from then on, it's like you've got to put in 8 hours of Hari Nam, otherwise you just can't function. Then you'll see taste comes pretty fast. Does that make sense? So it's something that we can affect to speed it up, but if we just stick to the process like that, then it will work. It will work. That's the nice thing about it. No, despite us, it'll work. That's why it's a foolproof system.
All right.
Yeah.
Sometimes the devotee says, "I'm so fallen that it wouldn't work." So that's like saying the process is weaker than
that. Yeah, my determination to be fallen is so great and so much more powerful than the devotional process. Yeah. The thing is it's just conditioning. You chant one name of the Lord, you're liberated. Right? But the point is we still think we're conditioned. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like somebody gets scared of something they think moves or in the dark. Someone turns on the light. There is nothing there. But still they're scared and looking and not sure. And, well, what about back there and this and that? You know, and there was nothing. You know what I'm saying? But they still are working on that. No, but. So that's what we're doing. The soul is, means this takes it even beyond the question before where we were talking about the prarabdha karma. The devotees have no karma. They're liberated. But because they still identify with the material energy, therefore, reactions that will that match that mentality, to purify it, those are arranged for the devotees. You understand? That's the further stage in it. There is no karma. The one is liberated. But one's not acting as if he's liberated. You know what I'm saying? The man's in jail. He acts as a criminal. He's done his time. He's let out. He still acts as a criminal. You know what I'm saying? But he could go out and act as a proper citizen. But he still thinks like that. You know what I'm saying? So that's why one avoids those situations, right? I mean, he's gotten out of jail. Don't walk down dark alleys anymore. You know what I'm saying? Don't do those things. Because then they remind you of the past. So that's why the four regulative principles are there and so many other restrictions, because then we just fall into our old habits, right? It means if you have to get up in the morning, what time do you have to go to bed? Early. Okay. When do parties happen? Yeah, and how many regulative principles are broken during a party? Yeah, it means depending on what it is, basically you could break all four of them. You know what I'm saying? Especially if the party's in Vegas, right? You know, so that it's guaranteed. You know, okay, Atlantic City. You know, give the what is that? Trump a little credit here. You know, what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Yeah, but who goes to Jersey, right? Jersey. Yeah, yeah. You'd rather go to Nevada, right? You know. Does that make sense? So, therefore, you avoid those things. Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing. So, unless they're staying up all night chanting Hari Nam, you know, like the Babaji's were, then you avoid that kind of thing. Otherwise, can't remember. It's a famous quote. Not sure where he got it from. Kirtanananda says, any discussion after 10 o'clock at night is prajalpa or something or nonsense. You know, in other words, if you're not supposed to be up at that time, if you are up at that time, what you're talking about is not worth talking about. Better to be in bed. Okay, so we finished that. Yeah. Okay, so is this more clear? Less clear? Somewhat clear, yes.
I have just admitted that sometimes you say, well, the process doesn't work because after so many years of practice, you can say proper practice.
But how do they know it doesn't work? You're still here.
Yeah, well, they still have a consciousness or something.
So what? They're still here. You know what I'm saying? But the point is it the practice that doesn't work? I went into the kitchen. I got my Jamie Oliver pot, and I got my fancy Japanese knife, and I got, I went to the high-class, boutique, place and got all the organic vegetables and spices and all that. And then I'm there and I'm cooking and it turned out bad. So all these ingredients and paraphernalia are bad. Who's bad? You know, the process works. So we're bad. We don't use the process properly, you know. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? Except means you have to be careful with a knife. You'll cut yourself. Right? You know, even if it's a fancy pot, you know, if you don't stir it, it still will burn. You know what I'm saying? So the thing is you don't follow the process properly. But the point is you say, I still have my attachments. Do you want to give up your attachments? Right? You know, and more important, do you want to develop a taste for the holy name? So you're functioning on, I have attachments, or you're functioning on proper chanting? Because the point is, it's not to give up the attachments, but to become attached to Krishna. But what gets in the way are our attachments. So when they come up, we note them. But it's not that we sit around all day thinking about them. How is that the process? You know, like he was saying, oh, I'm the most fallen, I'm so degraded, I'm so this, I'm so that. Where is that the process? Right? Where is that recommended? It's not. So we're not following the process. We're following what we think is the process. But it's simple. Perform the devotional activities in the association of devotees without offense. Try to have a proper understanding so that we do it properly. And whatever we're dealing with, engage it in the Lord's service. That's the focus. Why aren't we engaging in the Lord's service? Because I'm attached to do it for myself. So then we use the philosophy to analyze that. Why we would want to do that. Okay, we like the results of the activity, but much of the time we like the activity itself. So the point is we can do the activity for Krishna. Right? And then with time, it's just that because Krishna gets a nice result, and this is what I can do, therefore I'm doing it. So it's not even that I like doing the activity. Right? So that the Kanista, it's the results that they are attached to. The Madhyam, it's the activity. Right? But the pure platform is not either of them. Or let's say the Uttama platform, it's that you don't have either. It's just that you want to serve Krishna and you want to please Krishna in this way. Therefore, there's certain activities and certain, you know what I'm saying? So it's Krishna's happiness like this. Therefore, like Mother Jashoda wants to please Krishna in the parental rasa. So what does that require? She has to have a form that's therefore represents that and a situation that represents that. So she has the house. She's a mother, so she has a husband. So all those things are there, and therefore there she can do nicely. But it's not about, you know, I like being a mom, or I like having a big house, and hey, since we have the big house, there's plenty of room. You know, Krishna can, you know, there's 100 rooms in there, and, you know, I, you know, have 2 or 3 that I really like, but Krishna can have the other 97. You know what I'm saying? It's all about Krishna. Is that in some sense? So that's, that makes the difference. Okay? Yes? No?
Marriage is very important to develop the right identity.
Identity, but the right identity, I'm servant of Krishna.
Yes.
That's the identity.
And to more and more be aware about that thing.
Yes, of course. Because that's self-realization, because I am servant to Krishna. You know, I'm part and parcel of Krishna. Krishna is God, so he's the source. So, you know, and since I'm here, so my business is to do service. What am I going to do service with? I have material energy to use, so I engage the material energy in Krishna's service. I'm in the spiritual world, I engage the spiritual energy in Krishna's service. Is that? Okay, so I'm here.
Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki,
Jai.
Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki,
Jai
Natai Gaura Premati ki. It's a really long section.
Yeah, yeah. What's that, bro?